where Greenwich comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back. In the wake of the American Academy of Pediatrics telling us something we already knew, which is that COVID-19 has devastated the mental health of our young people, Patricia Reamer joins us now for a part two conversation about just what in Connecticut we're deciding to do about it, because our healthcare professionals have recognized that on top of the COVID-19 crisis, we are now facing a true mental health crisis. And as we do the woulda, coulda, shouldas of how we should have figured this out sooner, we're now left with trying to patch things up. Patricia Reamer, thank you so much for coming back on the show and welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you. And thanks for coming back on. So what I really wanted to further the conversation, which I was really taken by, the strategy of putting more mental health professionals in our intern clinician practices. Who are these people going to be, and how is that going to be able to be accessed?
Well, we actually have it in place already across at least 40 of our primary care offices in Hartford HealthCare. And the individuals that are there are either licensed social workers or health psychologists, and there is always psychiatric backup. So they're able to evaluate the patient, they're able to think about what they might need, talk with the primary care physician, and then if the primary care physician has further questions about, for example, a medication, as you were just talking about, there's a psychiatrist that they can also consult with. I frankly think if we could do this in pediatrician's office, that would help us with the crisis that we're having with children and adolescents now.
How many Hartford HealthCare practices are pediatric?
Actually, we do not do pediatric care in Hartford HealthCare. We do primary care. So this would mean reaching out to a different group of pediatricians, although I do think pediatricians are open to this. We currently have a program in the state of Connecticut called the Access Program, and that is staffed by HHC pediatric psychiatrists, Wheeler pediatric psychiatrist, and Yale pediatric psychiatrist. It's a number that pediatricians can call, get immediate access to a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and do a consultation, which is terrific. But I think that if we had, for example, social workers, psychologists in pediatricians' office, we know that we would probably find more children and adolescents earlier because of the screening that we could do.
So this would be something in terms of an awareness campaign that the state of Connecticut would do towards the providers, many small practices of pediatricians throughout the state, and let them know that you think it's in their interest to put someone of this skill set with their practice. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I was in a behavioral health, children's behavioral health legislative committee yesterday where this was being discussed. And here was one of the new numbers that I heard. In the state of Connecticut, we have about 800,000 children and adolescents. You know, for years, we've said that 10 to 20% of those children would have some sort of mental health issue that needed to be addressed at some point. At this point,
wow,
what the Department of Children and Families is saying is we are up to 50%. So 400,000 children and adolescents that probably need some sort of mental health assistance. It may not mean, certainly doesn't mean going into a hospital or into a highly intensive program, but may need something to help them at this time.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's grab that. If it's really the case of one out of two, we're chatting with Patricia Reamer, that's the kind of crisis and emergency. Don't you think that it has to start with parents? Don't you think that maybe parents need to be brought into our schools for special emergency sessions on how to recognize and cope with mental health problems and be the first line of defense and offense in this?
Absolutely. Part of this has got to be about educating parents, school teachers, but parents primarily, about what the signs and symptoms
parents
are, what they should look for. Absolutely. The problem is that even if we educate the parents, once they say they've seen something, they want help, the system is very hard to navigate, which is why if we can start with pediatricians who the parents know and can go to, then that's where, you know, we're going to get the biggest bang for our buck. But you're absolutely right. The need for education of parents is critical at this point.
Well, I'm going to go one step further. We're chatting with Patricia Reamer of Hartford Health, head of behavioral health, and one of our topmost policy advisors in the state. She's really in on things. 203-333-9422. Pat, let me just say this. I'm not somebody who stops when there's a symptom or a sign. As a parent, mm-hmm. as a human being, as a friend, I go beyond it. So what I'm saying is that why don't we have instruction for parents to be able to do some of those mental health provider skills? Because medicine is not going to be indicated in every case. There may be a list of five things that parents can learn how to do, even in their conversations with their children, so that they can be, I'm not saying a friend, parents are not friends, but so that they can
right.
help.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that there is an effort often to get out into the community. I know I go out and speak in the community. We have lots of staff that go to the high schools and have symposiums for parents. You know, we're trying to get to parents, but not all parents are able to avail themselves of those educational sessions because they're working two jobs or they can't leave the kids home alone in the evening when we're holding them. So we've got to find other ways to get out there to parents to help them understand, again, what the signs and symptoms are. And as you say, what are some things that they can help the child with so that maybe they don't need medication? Because as you say, not everybody needs medication when they have a mental health issue.
Especially kids. I mean, there's a lot of evidence
Correct.
To suggest that we over-medicate our kids in America versus other countries, like to a very large extent.
Yes.
So, and I'm not somebody against medicine for the right situation. I'm just somebody who's cautious about medicine. That's what I am.
Absolutely.
But to me, now you're telling me, of course, you just found this out yesterday, but 50%, I mean, come on. That's a crisis. That requires a coordinated effort with Fran Reynolds, whoever the head of the Superintendents Association is. She's been on our show many times. I forget names now. It's one of the first things that happens to me, Pat, is that the names go. I can remember a face, a first name. Anyway, I know it's Fran, and she's been on our show. But it requires a coordinated effort with the superintendent of schools to tell the parents, get a babysitter or have one spouse come. You need to attend this meeting. This is a drill now. Here are the signs. And by the way, the parents are going to be so happy to come because they already know. They already know when their kids are suffering. They're dying for help.
I would agree with you. And I think, as you know, in a crisis, there's always an opportunity, right? So,
and
I've been doing this for a long time. So for many, many years, the schools did not want mental health professionals to come in because they wanted to deny that there was a problem, whether it was with
really?
Drugs or mental health issues.
Really?
Oh, now I've again, long time. So I'm talking about 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even. But that has changed. The schools understand that they do need to help educate the parents. And so I do think we have a real opportunity to use the school system to help educate parents so that we can better identify when somebody really needs help or when a parent can do something that may be enough to help them. I think the other issue is that parents feel that they're going to be blamed if their child has a mental health issue. There's still a lot of discrimination around mental health issues.
There's a lot of that.
Stigma.
There is. There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
So we need to help parents understand that it is not their fault if a child is having an issue. You know, the family all needs to be involved in the treatment if there is a need for treatment, because you can't just identify the kid and say everything else around them is fine. However, that doesn't mean the parents are at fault for this issue. And that's something we really do have to get out there as a message.
Oh, there's no question that people, as a general rule, in their own head, they play back the apple doesn't fall far from the tree crap, because it is crap. And A lot of times parents are blamed for kids' behavior, even though the parent is the one struggling the hardest to try and change the kid's behavior, because the parent knows that the behavior is not acceptable, but very often can't do much about it. And that's the reality.
Right.
And so, you know, right. And parents, I mean, we're all, when we are parents, every kid is different. No one's given us a playbook of how to do this. You don't get any, you know, oh, I can do over fifth grade now. Can I go back and do it over because I did it wrong that year? So I'd like to do it better this year. You have to move on to sixth grade. You have no choice. So,
right.
You know, I mean, it. Yeah. But I think right now parents would absolutely love an opportunity to get together with other parents in a forum in school with a few teachers and the superintendent and the principal and some learned people like yourself who give them a checklist. Here are your warning signs. Here's what you can do about it. And here's a way as a parent for you to not overreact, right? You don't want to underreact, but you don't want to overreact. This may be something completely normal and typical your kid is going through. And here are some strategies, some concrete strategies of how to cope.
Right. That's exactly right. The other mind shift that we have to make is that, you know, for years and years when kids didn't come to school, we called them truant. We involved really the criminal system versus the mental health system. We need to understand, especially now as the pandemic is on, that we're seeing school aversion. Kids that literally are so anxious and depressed that they cannot get themselves to go to school. And that is very different from the schools looking at them as being truant. And that, I think, is the other education we need to really have in place, so that the school system understands that this is not a kid that is skipping school the way, you know, maybe some of us did in our adolescence for a class or a day. This is a kid that can't get themselves out of the house to school because they are so anxious or depressed. And that's a really important difference.
I'm hearing about that more and more. I'm hearing about that more and more of kids who can't function well enough to go to school. And it's not something that was common when I was raising my kids, and it was extremely uncommon when I was growing up. I think it's a, unfortunately, very telltale sign of a society in which kids are getting messages of fear and anxiety from everywhere, and they absorb it. We don't have a society we don't have a society that's particularly cheerful or positive right now, and we haven't since 9/11. Mm-hmm.
Right. That is right. Right. And in Connecticut also, since, you know, the Newtown disaster, that also, I think, has impacted. It seems like it was long ago. I was very involved there. But I think that there are still so many school shootings, and we've had them in Connecticut.
Yes.
And it makes our children very, very anxious.
Well, you can't listen. When I was going to school, it was fire drills. It wasn't lockdown. I mean, really,
right.
I mean, you know, the kids are, it's not, there's validation for that. They're not wrong to be so hyped up about anxieties when adults are so hyped up about anxieties. I mean,
that's
a bigger conversation, but I think that this country would have benefited much more from an FDR approach of we have nothing to fear but fear itself, because instead, what we've done is tell ourselves as adults and our kids that the world is a frightening place. Instead of the fact that the world has always been a frightening place, Pat, always. And the reality is statistically, it was a lot more dangerous to walk around for all kind of reasons 100 years ago than it is now. But we are living in a world in which we give into our fears. And it frustrates me terribly because I really don't want to be that person. I want to ask you about something else. We're chatting with Patricia Reamer, and she is a mental health professional. This is coming out of left field. I'm throwing it at you. I admit I'm throwing it at you, but I'm throwing it at you. You ready? You ready?
Yep.
I'm lobbing it right at you, Pat. Okay. I'm a probate judge. And as a probate judge in a district that has a mental health hospital, which happens to be, coincidentally, St. Fee's. This is a coincidence. I mean, you know, it has nothing to do with you directly.
Yeah.
One of the things that I believe should be happening in our mental health field that I don't see happening is that I believe women who are inpatient in our psychiatric hospitals ought to be able to go into an exclusively female ward. And I don't understand, and I have raised this many times, I don't understand why there's this insistent dumbness, complete obtuse attitude toward the fact that the reality is that many men that are inpatient in psychiatric wards present a hypersexual nature as a result, not fault, not blame, but hypersexuality is a very common aspect of some of their mental illnesses. And women in these psychiatric hospitals have a lot to deal with. That's why they're there to begin with. And I think that they should also be able to feel safer being on an all-female ward. And I'm told that's simply not done. So I'm putting it to you. I'd like to know why not.
So I'm going to say two things. One is that, yes, there are male patients that exhibit hypersexuality as part of their symptoms, but it is not all male patients. And I'm saying that because there is, a fear about especially male psychiatric patients that they are pedophiles or that they are rapists. And we know that's not true. But during an episode of, for example, bipolar mania, you might see some hypersexuality. So let me just say that. The other reality, and, you know, St. Vincent's is part of Hartford HealthCare's behavioral health network, is that in a crisis where we don't have enough beds, if you create a unit for just women and you've got 10 men sitting in an ED, but you've got 5 beds on that female unit and no beds on the male unit, you are putting yourself and the patients in a bind. I think it would be absolutely ideal to have units for just women because of their histories of trauma and all the things that they're dealing with. But it is really difficult to manage from a placement point of view and in this kind of surge where we are, you know, we're seeing many, many more children. But as we predicted, we are now seeing many, many more adults. So many of the EDs, Yale's ED, Hartford Hospital's ED, they are in surge for adults, which is another issue. And so I don't disagree with you. There was a great program at CVH when I was commissioner that was exclusively for women and substance abuse, and it was one of the best programs that I've seen. But it's very hard to manage that from a capacity point of view.
Well, I'm going to come back at you. First of all, I'm glad that you agree with me, because in the end, it has to be about quality care. And to me, I've been a judge for 8 years. Yes, there has been a relatively recent surge, no question about it, but it wasn't always that way. And I've been complaining for 8 years. So, you know, we have movable walls. We have situations where you could always have a core group of female only and then have some kind of, you could have some kind of sliding situation where you would figure it out. And yes, it might be a little bit more difficult to manage, but in terms of the delivery of quality care for the women who very often are victims of trauma, I just think that it's something we ought to do in Connecticut, and you're in a position to advocate for it. So I am just asking you to do so.
You know, I will. And I also think that, you know, our substance use programs are much better at this. So it's very common that in a substance abuse treatment program, women are on one floor, men are on another. And so maybe if they figured out how to manage it, you know, we need to learn from them. But I do know that it is difficult. I've worked with this for 40 years, and, you know, it's very, very difficult to accommodate everyone. I mean, frankly, every psychiatric patient should have a single room. We are not there yet. We are nowhere near there. And those are some of the things that, frankly, there is an infusion of dollars that is needed in order to allow us to do that.
Yeah, well, we're lucky about the fact that some of the spigot has been open. Connecticut's getting more dollars than it used to. And another story that might have escaped your attention is that our budget is much better than it's been in a very long time. We're like in the top 5 of the country now, except for our pension obligations that continue to linger and bring us down. If we were just to not look at that, Connecticut's in pretty good shape. But listen, you're a woman.
It is.
It's not a coincidence or an accident that you're a woman, and I'm a woman, and I see these women patients. And I have told you that, I will tell you this, that quietly and off the record, many healthcare providers have said to me, I wouldn't want my daughter here. And that chills me to the bone. That chills me to the bone.
Yep, I agree. I absolutely agree. So, and I do know that we're in a good financial position for the first time in years, which is why I think this is the year we really have to go over after resources for behavioral health. And I think the legislature is open to that, frankly. That's what I'm hearing. So I think it's, I hope it's going to be a good year for this.
So maybe we can do a woman's hospital. God knows we don't have enough psychiatric hospitals. Maybe we could do a woman's hospital. And that's how we could manage it. And we could funnel the women there. It would be okay with me. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Interesting.
All right,
idea.
Pat Reimer, thanks for coming on. You're going to come on again? You're going to come on again? All
absolutely.
Right. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Patricia Reimer on the Lisa Wexler Show. I need to meet you in person. All right. We'll be right back with more of the show. Stay tuned.